he said there was somebody, I forget who it is now, I can't remember, but anyway, they cleared somebody. It turned out to be an awful mistake. So he said, you were the next guy after that, so he decided to make sure I knew. Oh, yeah, they were gone into, but I must say that I dislike security. I dislike anything to do with it when you're responsible for it, the way I was later on. Mm-hmm. Because with intelligence, you're working with people who you're trying to inspire to do something, your own people.
And you want them to gain confidence in you and themselves.
Yeah, it's a positive thing you're doing, yeah. As far as you're concerned. And generally speaking, the motives are pretty good. But in security, you can't inspire people to be secure. If a person's going to be insecure, he's going to try and keep quiet about it. Mm-hmm. And you're dealing with the same type of problem as crime. It's somebody who conceals from you what he is doing or wants to do, or he's negligent and unthinking and careless and this kind of thing. To get a person to be secure isn't a sort of a noble major task as far as he's concerned. Oh yeah, those guys always harping about security and so on. I'm as secure as anybody. I'm not going to tell the Russians or anything, but you know, they let little things out. But you're dealing in a very negative way with personality. Mm-hmm. And it's a very frustrating thing because people like, anybody, almost anybody can let you down badly by simply making a little mistake. And your confidence in human nature just almost goes to zero when that kind of thing happens. Mm-hmm. So security is a very unpleasant thing to deal with, but character assessment is the worst of them all. Mm-hmm. If you have to, I knew people on character assessment, I got a lot of this from them, just talking to them while I was in this same job. Character assessment is, you go over it and you try to find what makes this person tick. Have they ever had a criminal offense? Are they out to help their friends or do they sort of cheat at cards? All this kind of thing that goes on. And are they conscientious, you know, and sort of about religion? All that kind of thing. You try and get a picture of them and say, well, can he be trusted? Is he the kind of a person you can say this is important and he will respond? But it's a very difficult thing to do. You're dealing with what is in a person's mind. And it's like intentions on the part of the enemy. It's in their mind. It isn't something that's there like a piece of concrete. So it's a very unpredictable thing to deal with, security. And
well, in that line then, say, during the vetting, would there be a personal interview by the people doing the vetting for the person who's being vetted? Say, when you were vetted, did they interview you?
No, they didn't for me. I think as time went on, they used to have so many of them, and it's got to be that there were an awful lot of people in this category because the things like radar and all that had to be classified because of the equipment they were working on. Mm-hmm. And it seemed there were increasingly large numbers of them had to be processed. Mm-hmm. And in that, they sent you gave you a form. Well, you had to fill out, you know, all this stuff on your form, and you could tell what it was all about. And then they'd go around and check on that to see whether you were telling the truth, you see. Mm-hmm. So that was the same as an interview. Maybe if there's a lot of contradictions in it, they would call you in and say, you know, wait a minute, we haven't found this to be the truth or something.
Well, the problem with that, though, is you're not really gauging a person's personality and how they think and how they react to a question.
No,
you're simply
no.
dealing with a yes or no or just a response. But how then can you tell how a person...
Very difficult. Very difficult indeed.
Yeah. Did you come up with anything that you used?
No, I don't think so.
Did you rely upon your intuition and how you would, your own judgment of a person?
I don't think you can. You can form friendships. You can say, well, that person would never let us down. There are very few of these really dyed-in-the-wool traitors. Mm-hmm. Most people are quite satisfactory. It's this one in a thousand or one in 10,000 that really causes all the trouble.
Mm-hmm. though an interview and a vetting procedure would perhaps weed out people who are likely to make the kind of errors and the mistakes that are often made.
It might. I didn't really ever get into all that very much. I didn't know too much about all that.
Yeah. Who handled the vetting? Was it?
Well, it was security. When I was in at this period, when I was Director General of Intelligence and Security,
mm-hmm.
well, I had a full colonel who was the Director of Security, and he had a vast staff that did all that.
Mm-hmm.
And they had people out in the field, that is all the headquarters and so on, and they would go out in civilian clothes and go around checking on people's stories and so on. That was their system they worked on.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't, I never really got very much into it. When they came under my command, well, I just assumed they knew what they were doing. I didn't try to delve into what they were doing, shake them up or anything like that.
Well, tell me, when someone came under your command, you would be given his record, and would you also be given detailed information on the person himself?
No, you mean in general, or you mean in security?
In general, I guess.
It was very difficult to get a hold of a person's personnel file.
Mm-hmm.
The people, it's not something you really want your own to be passed all over the place either when it comes down to it. So the people in, first of all, personnel postings have all that, and then the people in security have their side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I was chief of security, of course, and the guy for me, I could call anybody's file and ask for it. But if somebody else above me had asked for one, I would have wanted to know why and everything under the sun, and I probably would have said, look, make a digest of this, and we'll send it up to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the security file is all the sources they dealt with and all that sort of thing. Again, it could terribly touchy.
Yeah.
So I would have fought like tooth and nail to prevent anybody from getting it above me. Very often when I would ask for it, in order to protect the people involved, I would say, look, give me a summary of this case file. Which then they'd leave out all the sources in there. And just my own security people, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the personnel side, if they're posting you, you're not in this kind of business, you're out there commanding in a unit. Personnel won't say, oh, this is this guy's history. So you ask him what his history was when he gets there. So you don't get that either. If you're in personnel postings or up there where in the personnel branch, of course you can get at a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most fantastic files I've ever seen in my life. And a fellow said to me, I was in the personnel branch. He said, look, you ought to see the goddamn his files of your life. He said, get the one of this. Better cut that off if it's going. If it's going.
Yeah.
You got more time.
I've got as much time as you're willing to give. And
well,
we're talking what about?
Korea.
Okay, we're going to Korea.
It broke out more or less all of a sudden.
And you were still with the directorate?
Yes.
In Ottawa?
Yes.
Okay. There been no inkling that this was going to take place?
The plan was that if the Russians moved in...
The Russians or Chinese?
No, the Russians... The North Koreans.
Mm-hmm.
If the Russians gave North Korea the go-ahead to move in,
mm-hmm.
the West was going to walk out and let, you know, fight a rearguard action maybe, but get out. We weren't going to take on North Koreans and the Russians there.
Yeah.
That was the understood plan for that part of the world at that time.
And the Americans had agreed to this?
Yes.
Except MacArthur, probably.
Well, this was what we understood as the plan between the British and Americans, because they didn't want to be
embroiled in this kind of war.
Embroiled in that kind of a war when the West was wide open.
Yeah.
And, you know, Western Europe. So, but then Harry Truman pulled a big thing and got the UN to declare war on him overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Stalin was so caught flat-footed that he didn't even have a representative in the Security Council, and he couldn't veto it. And Harry just turned the whole thing upside down overnight, and we were in it
mm-hmm.
before anybody realized it, particularly the planners.
Yeah.
So it was right from scratch. It was almost a bolt from the blue. It was even worse than that, in a way.
Well, it's the only example of the United Nations really working.
Well,
because the Russians
yeah.
weren't there.
Because they weren't there.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm a great admirer of Harry Truman.
Give him hell, eh?
I think he made some of the biggest decisions the world's ever had.
The atomic bomb, Korea.
Oh, yeah. And the Marshall Plan and things like that are just terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, besides that, I met him.
Did you? Where did you meet him? I know it was off to the side, but where did you meet him?
At, he set up, after he'd left the presidency, he set up, or somebody set up, a Harry Truman Museum in, what was that town he came from in Missouri? Anyway, across the river from Kansas City in Arkansas. And there was a Harry Truman library there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was taking a course at the, not Kansas City, but at Leavenworth. Everybody mistakes it for the jail, but this is the American Army Staff College.
Mm-hmm.
I was taking a course there. And on the weekend, there's a tour laid on, and they took us over to Harry Truman's library. Independence, Missouri, that was the name of it. And Harry was there, displaying things. And there was, in the group I was with, there was a Major General Rockingham, the hero of Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a senior Canadian there, and they had a public relations fellow with us, too, American Army public relations, you see. So they said, this guy said, when Harry was talking to us all, and, you know, having tea or something, and they said, we'd like to get a picture of General Rockingham and then Mr. Truman here together, you see, and so on. Harry said, well, he said, General, I don't mind if you don't think it'll hurt your career. You know, this is old Harry, you know, all the way through. Somebody asked him, we've got to call in and see Dwight D. Eisenhower in the White House. He said, he hasn't got time to see every Tom, Dick, and Harry. So, but Harry was the one that really got us into that in a hell of a hurry. The point that I wanted to raise was that we had, at that time, we were so overextended.
Canada you're talking about now.
In my shop.
Mm-hmm.
We were so overextended that we had NCOs doing analytical work, or we called it analytical work. They were doing filing.
Mm-hmm. And that was strictly an officer's domain?
Well, it should have been. Mm-hmm. But in the case of Korea, North Korea, and we didn't have an officer working on that, so we would take a lot of little countries like that
and group them into a desk.
And group them into one desk, and we put an NCO in charge of it. And all he did was, for all the intelligence reports that came in from all over the place, some of them from South Korea, you see,
mm-hmm.
He would clip these, and we had an indexing system. And normally he would have put them in the indexing system, but he didn't have time. So all we had was a drawer, a great big drawer there for North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
All he would do is throw this stuff in the drawer, all clipped out with the date written on the back or something like that. He'd throw them into this drawer. There was just a pile of clippings in there. Well, as soon as Korea broke, this is the kind of thing that takes place in intelligence in anybody's headquarters. I called in the whole staff on about a Friday or so, and said, look, everybody's working the whole weekend here. We set up an assembly line, and I think we had about 18 or 19 officers at that time, and we gave each one of them a task, like one guy's armored corps. Anything comes through this line on armored corps, you write it up, and in the end we want you to write up on the North Korean armored corps.
Mm-hmm.
Pictures of tanks, anything. Paste it all into sheets and get it in there. One fellow we had on, he didn't do much and have any particular line, so he said, okay, your uniforms. So uniforms and rank badges and all that thing, all he looked for was that, passing through this line. Well, then we put a handful of this stuff in at one end and then pass it along from one to the other down the thing and all the way back again, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody writing up their own screed until we got through this drawer, which took us the whole weekend. And we ended up with a thing that was about that thick, which we had printed then.
Mm-hmm.
That was on foolscap, size of foolscap, so it was a big thing. I think it was only printed one side, because that's all we could do. That was a big thing. North Korean Armed Forces. And by golly, the Americans were, where did you get all this stuff from? See, they hadn't been doing much on it either.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was flabbergasted at this tremendous report we had, and we had it in the hands of everybody and a few days after things started, you see. And I must admit, there must have been a lot of errors and a lot of omissions, but see, there it was. You want to look up anything you want in the place, you could find it. There's infantry, their tactics were all kinds of things.
Well, had Korea really been that ignored to that extent by
everybody?
Well,
it had been by just about everybody, and because it was a radar. Nobody was worrying about it.
Well, have there been tensions between South and North Korea, or have they been so minor that you...
Well, we just weren't alerted. I don't remember the details, but we we weren't very alerted to it all. Neither were the British or Americans.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this. Were they closer to the Chinese or to the Russians at that point, North Koreans? Because you were saying the Russians gave them a lot of aid and...
We felt, yeah, they equipped them. And we felt that the Russians must have given them the go-ahead. Because we figured the Russians had got wind of the Allied plans.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what the deal was with the... I'm not sure. I don't think I was, but I wasn't then. And I don't think anybody can be sure that the Russians wanted to see the Chinese go in there. I think the Chinese elbowed their way in at the last minute against Stalin's will.
Foolish move on the Chinese, because they were really in no position militarily to do that thing. They had lots of men, but not much else.
Well, they, I think they were afraid that North Korea was going to fall.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But that's what my feeling was, that they wasn't necessarily with Stalin's approval that they went in there.
Mm-hmm.
However, that's, I really don't know about that. In any event, that was a sort of a scoop we had. And one of the spill-outs was that I went to General Graham, who was now Vice Chief of the General Staff, and said, look at that, we've turned this thing out and should be pretty good for our troops. We haven't got anything from the Americans or anything like equivalent to it. They had no manuals or anything on it at all at that stage.
Mm-hmm.
Had them sooner or later. But how about a trip over there so I go and check and see how this all is? Oh, no, couldn't see any value in that, so I didn't get my trip to Korea. He said, oh, no, that's not justified. Of course, he was very much a money man. It would cost money, you see.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to spend hundreds of millions.
Mrs. Kenyon, am I interrupting dinner?
No, I'm done. But it is getting late.
Oh, goodness, yeah.
Okay, well, perhaps we should shut her off and...
Yeah.
And we can pick up Korea since we're just starting it now. Unless you wanted to wrap it up quickly.
That was all I wanted to say on Korea. That was...
Well, how long were you with the directorate until you moved off to, as an attaché to Yugoslavia?
I was there from
spring of
April of 47
to
July of 51.
So you would have been there for about a year while Korea was going on.
I think so, yeah.
Well, how much input would you have, to the Canadian arm or to the Canadian Army?
Very little.
Well, where were they getting their information from? The Americans, correctly?
Oh, yeah. They were under their command, and they would get the daily intelligence briefing and so on and so on.
Wasn't there a Commonwealth division, though, that Canada was part of?
I guess so, yeah, but they get it then from that division, from their own headquarters out there. Same as we did in Northwest Europe during the war. We got it from whoever we were serving. And the input from Canada is basically on strategy.
And political.
And that kind of thing. It's not on the tactics of the battle and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Battle intelligence, we couldn't produce here at all. We'd have to get copies of what they were issuing out there to find out what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we didn't issue anything like that, and in fact, I think our troops got as much as there was to get the way they did it. They got it from their own superiors out there.
Yeah, certainly, there wouldn't have been any advantage to the Americans not giving them full access.
Oh, no. And in battle intelligence, there's no great restriction on that. You hand that out to help them any way you can.
Well, usually the enemy knows it because it
concerns
them.
Well, it concerns them. They know it, so...
Yeah.
Nothing like as secure up there as it is back here. No, we didn't really get into it very much, except that I did manage out of Korea to get this morning briefing of the CGS. And he was continually being... This was folks. He was continually being asked during the day by ministers, all that, saying, well, what's going on out there? As though he should know right minute to minute. Well, he found that just to ask for reports now and then wasn't enough. He wanted to know every day because we were getting a daily report on what was going on out there. Come in overnight and I'd have it first thing in the morning. I could go in there and tell him what it was. And I'd maps up in his office in one corner and just go to the map and I would show him what had taken place and that sort of thing. And that, as far as I was concerned, was a tremendous end, because it's a whole new subject, this business of getting the ear of your senior people, of the policy makers.
Mm-hmm.
When you do that, when I did it, sure, I would start off on Korea, and that's the only thing you really wanted. But if I had some hot tips on something that had just taken place in the French army,
mm-hmm.
I would just dribble that out too. And eventually, I worked the thing into becoming a morning intelligence brief, which was far exceeded.
Simply Korea.
Just Korea, which was really nothing much for me because it was moving flags around on a map.
Mm-hmm.
And but I was able to insinuate myself into his intelligence and bring him up to date on things. Now, this is a very, very important thing in intelligence, which I've disagreed with a lot of people on.
Mm-hmm.
Americans come far closer to this than the British do. The British will tell you coldly. There's no use trying to brief your senior until there's a crisis. And they'll defend that tooth and nail. I've heard ministers say that themselves. You'll never get anything in front of the cabinet until there's a crisis. Well, this to me is the wrong way to do it, because when there's a crisis, they've got their mind made up. They've been reading the newspapers every day. Their mind is made up. Churchill said he got 9/10 of his information from the press.
Mm-hmm.
And if you let them read the press, they're the victims of the press. My theory is you've got to keep them up to date before it becomes a crisis. That is, they have to have the background all the way through. To give them the background at the last minute just rolls off like water off a duck's back. They still stick to their opinion. This is my theory, you see.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I believe that's a tremendously important thing, to be able to dole out intelligence on a regular basis. When I came back into intelligence again in 64, it worked automatically. Hellyer had all these meetings, and there was always an intelligence briefing beforehand, and the chief of defense staff had all these meetings. There was always an intelligence briefing beforehand, so it was handed to me on a platter by then.
Mm-hmm.
It was working well, and I liked it. But this was the first time I'd ever been able to get in there and get somebody's attention. And these people are very amenable to it.
It becomes routine, I guess.
Becomes a bit routine. And then they'll say, hey, and what's going on over here these days, you see, and so on. And one time, this is about the highlight with folks who really you couldn't dislike him in many ways. One time he came back from Washington where he'd had a lot of briefings there. And I went in with my briefcase and that to go and stand by the map. He'd be on the phone. I'd stand there and wait for him. He went down and he said, okay, now this morning, he said, you sit down in this chair where he used to sit, you see. I was standing. He said, you sit down in the chair, I'm going to brief you. He gave me a long harangue on what had taken place in Washington on what they told him about the foreign situation, you see, and so on. Well, that's how, a rapport you had, which was damn good as far as I was concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And consequently, I could phone him up direct without going through anybody and say, I think I've got something you're interested in, as I did that one time when he let me down so bad.
Mm-hmm.
But there were other times when I was able to do that too, and it worked darn well, because he knew you. He knew the sort of thing you had, the information you had, and so on. The rest didn't know anything about it.
Yeah. Would you do this on a 7-day-a-week basis, or would it be just Monday
to
Friday?
No, just Monday to Friday. Well, I think we worked Saturdays in those days. Saturday mornings, didn't we?
Yeah, when you were in Ottawa at that time.
Yeah.
But by the time we were back in Ottawa.
Well, by the time we went back, it only worked 5 days a week.
Well, what would happen on the weekends then? Say, during the Korean War, or say if Incheon happened on Sunday, for example, if it did.
Well, when I was... I don't think we had anything like that. Generally speaking, I don't think we had anything. I can't think of any episodes we had that were of that kind of importance. But when I was back the last time, there was always a senior duty officer.
Mm-hmm.
And like when the Czech crisis came along, it was Hennessy, Admiral, Vice Admiral Hennessy was. So he was at a party.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you could go around and do things like that, but you had to leave your telephone number at your home and where you could be reached, you see. So I reached him at his party he was at and said, I'll come and brief you there. And I went to the party. We stepped outside in another room and I briefed him on what the score was.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was my responsibility. And whether he did anything about it or not, took it to the minister or something, it was over from there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the other hand, I had a direct channel with the minister, which is laid on by the minister. And with that, I'd phone him at his house or anything.
So you didn't have to go through that?
I didn't have to go through anybody for that one.
That's it.
And I didn't hesitate to use it either. And quite often, it got so bad that when, I'll come to this again, but when he'd be away, he did a lot of traveling. Of course, we had troops all over the world in those days. When he would be coming back, very often on a Sunday night, he was like me, travel on weekends, because you're not out of the office, you see. You're using your own time and not the government's time. But he'd very often come back on a Sunday night, and I'd be out at the airport waiting for him when he came back, wanting to tell him something. What would happen then was that I'd have a staff car there, and there'd be a staff car to meet him, and he usually had his wife with him, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd say, okay, you go home in my staff car, I'll ride with the brigadier, you see. So we'd get in, and then usually I had briefed him by the time we got to his house. And sometimes he'd ask me at the house to finish it off, you see. But one of the last times that he was there, I was out there waiting at the airport, and it was late, you know, about 11 or 12 o'clock on a Sunday night. And Mrs. Hellyer, I don't think she ever smiled. She certainly didn't like me in the slightest. But anyway, I was there waiting. She walked up and she said, "Not you again." She detested it. Why? I don't know.
An incursion into her private life.
I guess it was, yeah. That's how much she thought of me.
Yeah. Okay.
Heather never objected.
Yeah. Well, let's cut her off here,
sure.
And
sure.
We'll pick her up next week.
Yeah, sure.
Now, again, can I get you to tell me when you're going to be going away?
Yes.
I've got my little pad here, which I'll pull out.
Yeah.
I wrote it down and I lost a piece of paper. I wrote it down on. Hence the briefcase and all the files.
Oh,
nice and neat and tidy from now on.
What did I do with that? Well, we were away from the 11th to the 13th.
Okay, so
we're away that whole week.
That's right.
It'll be the 13th that we won't be here for you.
For that one, we'll be away that. We'll have to miss that whole week.
Okay.
Then, where are we? 1984, and today is, that would be June, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'll get you a calendar.
June.
Well, I've got one right here.
Well, on the, I had suggested that we change the 27th to the 28th. Was it?
I can remember doing that with 1 week.
Yeah, you said we'd change the 27th to the 28th, and I said that's too soon. They might not leave that morning. They might not leave till that afternoon or evening.
So we the 29th, Friday, would be okay if that's all right with you.
It's fine with me.
So that's the only time we'll affect us at all, that I know.
Yeah, we'll be here for the 20th.
So that I'll be able to see you on the 6th, the 20th, and the 29th?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And thank you for that address. That's great. I'll get in touch with him. I wanted to find out what the business is of joining. My old friend Bell is in it, because I saw him on TV. He's a brigadier when he retired.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to look him up in the Ottawa telephone book, but I couldn't find him. He didn't put his rank in, so millions of Bells.
Yeah. I'm one myself. I'd suggest talking to Kid first instead of writing to
Well, he probably knows all about it.
Yeah.
Just what I want, yeah. Excellent.
Good.
If it costs too much, I won't join him.
I don't think it will. Probably yearly dues or something.
Yeah.
You read any of their publications?
No, I haven't. In fact, I didn't even know there was a Canadian one. I once tried to get a group together to form one. And